For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, with the latest readout video from our free Wednesday Wake Up email newsletter. A howdy to the folks in Houston who've made that city number 21 on our all-time views by city list, and a sneer at hydrogen, which from a standing start became the fuel of the future, then a passe dud at remarkable speed. So trendy was it, quite recently, that Canada's Prime Minister sent Europeans seeking natural gas packing 2 years ago with a patronizing pat on the head, an assurance that there was no business case for selling it, and instead promising them hydrogen export terminals powered by windmills. But now, the whole thing seems to be doing a Hindenburg. Robert Bryce writes that the hydrogen bust is here, and explains that, quote, 9 H2 projects in Europe and the US have gone up in smoke since August. Harvard analysis savages Bill Gates' claim that cheap green hydrogen will be the Swiss Army knife of decarbonization, end quote. And in case Bryce is dismissed as a dreaded skeptic in an era that favors gullibility, Canary Media also concedes unhappily that, quote, 1 year in, U.S. clean hydrogen hubs face questions and have few answers. There's little detail available on the $7 billion federal program to jumpstart U.S. clean hydrogen, leaving environmental advocates concerned the projects may be off track, end quote. But nobody's sure, because they seem to be as lacking in transparency as in profitability. And Canada's big political plans to export green hydrogen aren't getting off the ground either. No exports, and no hydrogen. But otherwise dazzling. Otherwise here meaning in handing out huge sums to firms that promise results they haven't delivered. According to the old joke, hydrogen is the fuel of the future, and it always will be. Because this kind of fuel cell was actually invented back in 1838, and it's been about to take off ever since, including being commercialized only 94 years later. And yes, hydrogen fuel cells do exist, but they're just not that special, to put it mildly. You've probably never seen one or used one, and there's a reason. Specifically, inefficiency. It takes a lot of energy to split up water. And then, once you do, hydrogen is surprisingly nasty stuff to handle, store, and transport, and it doesn't give much bang for the buck when it gets where it's going compared to, say, gasoline or natural gas. It actually does by mass, the problem is it doesn't by volume. And so, in the piece mentioned above, Bryce quotes energy analyst Steve Brick that hydrogen is a, quote, thermodynamic obscenity, end quote. And also a fiscal one, it seems. In the newsletter, we also complain that climate alarmists often can't decide what the problem is, only the cause. Floods? Climate change. Droughts? Climate change. More hurricanes? Climate change. Fewer hurricanes? Climate change. And now the CBC headlines a widely reprinted Associated Press story, Churchill adapts and thrives as warming climate threatens polar bear tourism, end quote. Polar bear what? For decades, polar bears were a key charismatic megafauna talking point for climate alarmists as they dwindled, starved, and went extinct. But then they started flourishing, especially once a legitimate issue of overhunting was largely addressed. But they might disappear if the sea ice melts, in which case the town of Churchill, Manitoba, is ready to promote tours to see beluga whales. So, naturally, the whales have to be threatened too, by causes yet unknown, but if it happens, or even if the whale population soars, it'll be climate change, of course, and it'll be a disaster, because there's nothing climate change can't do, except perhaps shut up. That CBC puff piece on rugged Churchill, located on the rugged shore of rugged Hudson Bay, 1,700 kilometers north of rugged Winnipeg, begins, quote, change has broken, remade, and continues to reshape this remote town where tundra meets forest on the shore of Hudson Bay. The economic base collapsed when the military left town. Rail service and cargo ships, the lifeblood of supplies for a town not connected to the rest of the world by roads, blinked out. The weather is warming, signature animals are dwindling, and even the ground is shifting. Through it all, Churchill has adapted, end quote. Yay, Churchill! Boo, warming! Wah, signature animals! But wait, there are currently so many polar bears that entrepreneurs are cashing in with bear-proof touring vehicles. It's just that, quote, if, as scientists fear, shrinking sea ice crashes the bear population, end quote, they'll cope again. Quote, the town is promoting tourism for beluga whales, although those too may be harmed as the entire Hudson Bay ecosystem, including the food the belugas eat, shifts to one usually seen further south, end quote. So it's another disaster for which there's no actual evidence. But on climate, you can say just anything. And as long as it's all bad all the time, you don't need to worry about having evidence to back it up. Thus, in the newsletter, we also scorn the IEA's latest peak oil delusion. But on the other hand, we praise growing enthusiasm for nuclear energy among alarmists, including Heatmap, which praises Microsoft and Google for buying the stuff, but especially praises Amazon for investing directly in it. Yeah, man, on the other hand, the New York Times can't get enough of the idiots moving to places with nicer climates that are secretly awful because of climate change and only journalists know. And we note that Scientific American just can't help themselves. Almost every newsletter they send out has something on climate change, an obsession that they extend to no other area of science. And when, for instance, this was on October 16th, they tout, quote, a fascinating six-part series on how indigenous communities are confronting climate change, end quote, we're extremely dubious that it's fascinating, or even remotely interesting, or, indeed, that it's really science. In the newsletter, we also note that the German government also seems unable to help itself. As we've mentioned, their Energiewende has pivoted the economy right into a brick wall. And now, The Economist reports that, quote, Germany's economy goes from bad to worse, end quote. Now, that publication blames, quote, soaring energy prices that followed Russia's invasion of Ukraine, end quote, rather than, say, a catastrophic policy bet on hugely expensive and unreliable alternative energy. But more and more people know that that's what it is. And the more the bien-pensants insist on ignoring it, the more obvious it will become that they are out of touch. In the newsletter, we also scorn the latest alarmist complaint about hurricanes, namely that the science has become politicized. Surely that's a bit rich coming from alarmists who seize upon every storm as proof that we must take political action. In the newsletter, we also quote the old jibe about how some people's minds are like concrete, you know, all mixed up and permanently set, which we thought of when we read in Heatmap about the supposed dilemma of Microsoft, which is committed to sustainability, including low-carbon building materials, but unfortunately it's also cranking out data centers at a massive pace. And guess what? Those centers are made in large part of concrete. Now, supposedly there is such a thing as zero-emissions concrete, which costs more and is unavailable, but at the same time, we're told, it is, quote, a product that must become the standard if we are to stop climate change, end quote. So, boo Microsoft, and a fat lot of good all their virtue signaling did them. But the point is, do these people really think that if Microsoft made cement out of whatever has no emissions at all, that the world's weather would no longer vary? Is stop climate change a coherent aspiration, however improbable? What could it possibly mean? Would there be no decade warmer than another, or wetter? Would that be in one place, or would it be everywhere? Or are they just using random words without caring whether they convey any coherent, identifiable idea? And another thing. A significant Canadian publication called The Hub is hyping a long, dreary series in which a quasi-conservative advocacy group pays for essays promoting a conservative approach to climate, which boils down to explaining how conservatives can jettison their principles for no apparent political advantage, a genre in which become climate alarmists with an economics degree has been dominant of late. Since they weren't interested in an actual conservative point of view in their series, we decided to write one anyway, which relies on such genuinely conservative notions as be sensible about science and economics, and don't get hustled along by hype. Or, to quote from The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy again, don't panic. By the way, our newsletter has a regular Say What feature, along with a worth repeating, and we don't normally put them into these videos. But we do have to mention this one, Michael Mann's latest abusive missive that said, quote, like vampires and cockroaches, climate deniers and fossil fuel apologists don't like it when someone shines a bright light on them, end quote. Gosh, where have we heard fanatics denigrating those they hate as cockroaches before, or as vampires? It's ugly, ugly stuff. Yet the University of Pennsylvania just named Mann their first ever Vice Provost for Climate Science Policy and Action, end quote. So presumably, they approve of his tone. Now, on a more cheerful note, tuberculosis. Why is that cheerful? Because this one-time scourge, also known as consumption, is a bacterial infection that used to be a big killer around the world. According to Wikipedia, in the early 1800s, it was responsible for a quarter of all deaths in Europe. and data from Statistics Canada's Historical Archive shows that the death rate from tuberculosis in this country was over 80 per 100,000 back in the 1920s. Today, it's less than 1 per 100,000 here, except among the elderly, for whom it's still only about 1.6 per 100,000. Under age 50, it's less than 0.1 per 100,000, so essentially zero. Now, in the rest of the world, death rates are much higher, but, as we show in this week's cheerful chart, they're coming down quickly just about everywhere. Here are the numbers, courtesy of Our World in Data. And for this positive trend, we can thank effective vaccines and antibiotics, and the fossil fuels that made it possible to manufacture and deliver these life-saving medicines that have helped so many countries around the world hasten the end of this lethal monster, and have also created the economy in which advanced high-quality medicine can be invented, produced, and distributed, and acute illness treated in excellent hospitals. Oh, and also improved both food and shelter, dramatically assisting the body's own natural defenses. Other than that, they've played no real role. Now, on a surlier note, apparently there was a drought in the Amazon in 2023, which the World Weather Ambulance Chasers naturally blamed on climate change because such things obviously never used to happen. And apparently climate change causes droughts, even though the Amazon experienced record floods in 2012 and 2021, and such things too are blamed on climate change. But of course, in the real world, none of this variability in weather is new. With a hat tip to Ryan Mauer, we learned of a 2023 study by two climate scientists who reconstructed the precipitation history of the Amazon from 1790 to 2016 by combining tree ring data with an exhaustive search through online archives of historical Brazilian news records. And the reconstructed record shows that the Amazon regularly cycles between floods and droughts, that the worst drought on record was in 1865, followed by an extended severe drought in 1875 to 77, and that exceptional floods were common in the 1800s, especially in 1818 and 1892. Of course, the World Weather Accusation crowd pay no attention to these things, which is why we predict that within a few years, there will be a great flood in the Amazon, and they will rush out a press release saying you're to blame for that one too. Now, we do wonder if they'll blame CO2 for asparagus. Because for our part, courtesy of the CO2Science.org archive, we're thanking the former because, yes, again, it helps the latter grow. So, if you like a few buttered asparagus spears with your steak, keep the CO2 coming. And the beef. And the butter. For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, and I think hydrogen's a gas, but not much of a fuel.